And welcome to the latest episode of Who Do You Think You Are? The podcast series by A3 Communications, the data storage industry PR agency. My name is Fred Monson, and I'm the founder and CEO at A3 Communications. Today, we'll be speaking to Tom Allen, editor of one of the UK's most respected technology titles, Computing. I am sure most of our listeners are familiar with this magazine. It's been around for a long time, and it's certainly one of the most prestigious that we have in the UK. Tom has been a journalist and editor for 15 years, most of them spent writing about technology. Hey, Tom, welcome to Who Do You Think You Are? Great to have you in the chair today. How are you?
Hi, Fred. Thanks for that lovely introduction. Yes, I'm very well, thanks.
Excellent. I'm really looking forward to having a chat because a chat about work and journalism and the industry rather than a chat about chocolate and cars. So I think our listeners are more interested in what you have to share about your day job. So let's get started. I think we can safely say that the majority of our listeners is familiar with Computing magazine. But for those who aren't, Tom, could you give them a quick introduction to the title, bearing in mind that most of them are based in the US?
Yes, of course. So we're a UK-based online publication. We were physical for a long, long time, but about 10 years ago, I think we went online only. Excitingly, this is our 50th year of publication. So yeah, we have been around a long time, roughly as long as the internet. But yeah, we're B2B tech publication for IT leaders all over the world. We're primarily UK-based, but since we got acquired by the Channel Company, which was last year, we're actually expanding across the pond to the USA. That will be launching next year, 2024, under the MES brand.
MES, Tom.
MES, M for mother, E for enterprise, and S for services. So mid-size enterprise services, the MES brand, which already exists, but we're sort of taking it and expanding it. So that's for end users all up and down the sort of IT chain. We do news, of course, like any good tech publication, but the sort of meat and drink of what we do is interviews and research with IT leaders. So that's C-level anything, CIO, CDO, CTO, CISO. There's a huge variety of what we cover.
All right, that's interesting. So why are you expanding that title into the North American market now? Where do you see the potential? What's changed?
Well, I mean, I think if we say technology has a home, it probably is North America. So from that point of view, it makes sense. And of course, you've got IT end users everywhere. IT isn't just an industry by itself. It's not just the tech industry. Everyone uses tech. It's in automotive or in agriculture and healthcare. Everyone uses IT. So you've certainly got a lot of IT end users in North America. And the only thing that sort of kept us out of it so far has been resource. And now we have that resource. And of course, the Channel Company is a US firm. They own CRN.com, which is used to be officially known as Channel Reseller News, but now it's just CRN. Our sister title is CRN here in the UK. The Channel Company came along and they were like, well, we want to bring the two CRNs back together again. And, hey, there's Computing as well. Like, it's an end user brand. So why don't you come along too? So we've got that sort of end-to-end proposition, as it were. So already a great and very strong sort of presence in the US market and I would say all of North America. And now Computing is able to get there as well. And that's just the first step of the international expansion. We're also going to be expanding to the European continent next year. And then the aim in the future is also APAC and Latin America. I have volunteered to run a Brisbane office, but so far I've been denied.
That's a bet, especially if you want the job to come with a home that overlooks the ocean. That would be very nice. Yes, Brisbane is quite nice. So, Tom, this is very interesting. So I know you focus on computing, but are you able to tell us a little bit more about how CRN in the US and CRN in the UK will come back together? Because as a PR agency with a presence both in the US and in Europe, we often find ourselves having to explain to clients, prospects, that even though two magazines may share the same title, and this could be CRN, it could be a storage magazine, for example, they are not necessarily linked. They don't necessarily belong to the same company. And that, until I spoke to you, I believed I knew was the case for CRN. So what does that mean? Does that mean that the teams will merge? Does that mean that coverage, you know, stories will merge? What will change?
Well, the process already started. We had very much that issue that you described where people were like, oh, where? Hey, great, this is going to be on CRN. And, oh, look, this CRN in the USA has this brilliant story. Can we get it on the UK version? And for a long, long time, it was like, well, no, because it's nothing to do with the UK website. Now it is. So team merge is, I wouldn't go so far as to say the teams have merged because, you know, obviously some are still in North America and some are here in the UK. But there's definitely a lot of cross-pollination. So a lot of coverage gets shared between the titles, and that includes computing as well. There's a lot of work between all the journalists across the different CRN titles. There's also CRN Germany, which launched this year. Martin Frieber is the editor of that, who's based in, obviously, in Germany himself. It's German.
Yes.
And that's already been going out very, very well. So lots of stories shared all across the world, basically, at this point. All the journalists talk to each other and bounce ideas off each other. So while it may not be an official, like there is just one CRN team, at a ground level, the team works very closely together.
Right. So yesterday at Technology Live, our, you know, deep dive event dedicated to tech and data storage, we had a representative from CRN Poland. Is there any link at all with that version of CRN?
CRN Poland is still a different one. Not part of the channel company, because CRN used to be, you know, this huge, huge global sort of brand, and it split a long time ago. Hence why there was a US version and a UK version. But yeah, eventually, hopefully, it will all be back under one roof.
Okay. So tell me about the plans for Europe. Is it just, at the moment, is it just about CRN Germany, or can you share a little bit more about how the channel media, which I wish, you know, that weren't the name, because it sounds like it's just about the channel, but obviously it isn't, because they have computing, for example. What are the plans for new maybe titles in Europe? Are you able to share any details with us?
It's a very exciting time actually to work. I know I sound very corporate when I say that, but it genuinely is really quite thrilling to sort of be with the company at this stage. So the plan, and I'll say from a computing standpoint because that's where I know, the plan is to launch Computing Germany. And that will be early next year. And then also expanding to other markets. Germany will, you know, cover the whole DACH market. So Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and probably some of Benelux as well. And then we'll have Computing France, Italy, and Spain. And I believe the plan is the same for CRN, but probably don't quote me on that one because I don't definitely know for certain.
No, of course. Well, that sounds very exciting, and we would definitely like to find out more about, you know, the plans and when things happen, because the editorial landscape has been shrinking so much for the past, say, 15 years. When I started a long time ago, there were so many titles, and the editorial teams were quite substantial. And then the titles went, the editorial teams went, the business model became to use a lot of freelancers. So it's very exciting, as you said, to see that there's actually a publisher who is looking to reignite a little bit of fire in this landscape and bring new titles out. So we'll definitely be huge supporters, Tom. So keep us posted.
Yeah, absolutely. And you make a good point there that the landscape has changed a lot. I think certainly this year, artificial intelligence has a lot to do with that. You know, we've seen certain titles cutting down their editorial teams and replacing them with AI, but that's not what we're all about. It's why we focus much, much more on value-added thought leadership, interviews, research, rather than just, you know, the sausage factory of news and listicles. Anyone can do that, frankly, and AI can do it very, very well, very, very quickly and cheaply. And that's no way to differentiate yourself in the tech space these days. You need to add some analysis, some value, something that people can't get anywhere else. And that's what we're doing. That's our business model.
Absolutely. And to be honest, if they're going to be the same caliber as computing and CRM, that is going to be very exciting. Very worried about it. That's it. That's the thing. I always say to our clients, it may be harder to get into certain titles, and the fact that they are not swayed by any money that you may throw at the advertising department. But when you do get coverage in these titles, you know that anyone who's reading it will actually sit up and take note. They will go, wow, okay, this has credibility. You see what I mean? Whereas sometimes you've got those pay-for-play type reports. I'm always very skeptical of those. I'm not a big fan, to be honest. So I'd rather work harder and get coverage in computing than work hand-in-hand with the ad side and get coverage that way.
Which we've done before. You and I have worked together in the past. You introduced me to Graham, formerly at Graham Hagland, formerly at Williams F1, now at PlayStation. He's become a really good contact of mine.
Excellent. Well, that's good. See, that helps. That helps everyone. So I'm glad that introduction worked out well. So talking of introduction and contacts, why did you become a journalist? Because you actually have qualifications that helped you become the type of journalist or editor that you are today. What attracted you to journalism?
Probably my favorite author in the world is Terry Pratchett. And he has in his sort of bio, is about the author page, it turned out that he was a journalist before he became a writer. And I was like, if it's good enough for Pratchett, it's good enough for me. So I really wanted to be a writer. And I did creative writing at university, which I loved very, very much and enjoyed that. That's where I met my wife. It was a great time of my life. University ended and I was like, well, unless I am Terry Pratchett, then it's kind of difficult to get a job just writing novels and things like that. So I thought, what can I do that will allow me to write and get paid for it? And hey, journalism. And I was pretty lucky in that I went to university at the University of Essex in Colchester. And there's a big B2B publishing scene in Colchester. Totally unaware of that when I chose the university, but it worked out really well. And I joined a company called Mulberry Publications. Pretty small, but they had a few different B2B titles. My family background was in jewelry. So my mum and dad owned a jewelry manufacturing company. And one of the titles that Mulberry had was Jewelry Focus, which is one of the jewelry industry magazines. And I joined as an editorial assistant on that. And then they also had the Funeral Service Times for the funeral industry and Pet Gazette for the pet industry.
Definitely quite the spread.
It was quite the spread. We had one advertiser.
Titles, yes.
There was one advertiser who advertised across all three magazines because the company would make diamonds from the ashes of your dead pets.
Oh, gosh. That is that's impressive that they managed to find a common denominator.
It's a real niche. But yeah, I started as the editorial assistant on Jewelry Focus and then ended up working across all three. The recession hit, the 2008 recession, and I very rapidly had to move up to editor of all three titles. So I'd been in journalism for about 5 months.
Wow,
it was a bit of a trial by fire.
Yeah, scary and exciting all at once.
Yes, very much so. A bit of a trial by fire, as I say. And I definitely developed a bit of a nervous twitch, but I did get through it. And then I went back to university, did a master's because the job market was frankly terrible. And then I got out and got into technology journalism. After that, I worked for the NHS for a little while, as people do when they're fresh out of university. Got some temp work and then managed to get back into editorial. I joined a company called Mecco, which was, again, very small, but they did a very, very well-respected display tech magazine called Display Monitor, and kind of never looked back. That was my introduction to technology, and it moved a lot faster than funerals.
It certainly did, but I'm thinking, you know, if you wrote for a pet magazine, a funeral magazine, and a jewelry magazine, surely the fact that today you write about different technologies really doesn't worry you one bit, right? Because you've obviously written at the same time about different things before. So what, well, obviously maybe that is part of it, but what do you think makes you good at your job today, running the editorial side of a leading tech magazine? Why do you think you're doing obviously such a good job, because computing is still doing very, very well?
Glad to hear you say it. I think just purely from a writing point of view, then my background does help with that. You have to learn very quickly, and most journalists will have started in different industries to the one they end up in and choose to end up in. So from that point of view, you know, you just need to be able to have this sort of broad, shallow understanding. And I had a broad, shallow understanding of lots of different areas, and then got into tech and thought, this is the one I want to focus on. When you have that very broad understanding of different areas, it's easy to then get a broad understanding of lots of different other areas in terms of technology now. So, and that makes it very easy to draw links between them. So you can see like a cybersecurity story and think, this will affect this area of the finance industry. Or you can see DevOps and think, oh, that'll affect cloud in this way. So in terms of the writing and sort of understanding the market, that's been very, very helpful. But the job as editor is a lot more than just writing. There's obviously the management, and I've always enjoyed working with people. But there's also lots and lots of public speaking and event hosting and that kind of work, which I never thought I would enjoy. I always, in school, like volunteered to do that kind of stuff, but I was very, very nervous about it. And that has completely gone away now. I've done hundreds of these types of things. I would say confidence is key, and the only way I got my confidence was by doing it over and over and over again, but also by being introduced to it slowly. So I had a great editor at Computing who's still here, although is now the managing editor of sort of all the channel company editorial brand, Stuart Sumner. And he sort of gave me this fairly slow introduction to event hosting and public speaking. And then, you know, just sort of kicked me off the diving board and put me in the deep end. So that was very helpful. I'm also just generally a fairly informal person, and I think that also helps put people at their ease. It always makes me smile to get a laugh out of the audience or out of a panelist or whoever I'm talking to. So if I can just drop in a little, you know, drop the formality a bit, that always helps put people at their ease.
Absolutely. And yes, we've attended a couple of events together. I think the tech industry, and I personally find the data storage industry in particular, very informal. And most of the people are very nice, very sociable. And if you focus on one industry for a few years, you will realize it's always the same people. They may be working for different companies after 3, 4, 5, 10 years, but it's always the same people.
Most industries do tend to be a bit insular, yeah.
Yes, very much so, but in a good way. I feel so at home now in the data storage industry because I've been in it for such a long time and I know most people. And it's a lovely feeling to do that because it makes it feel less as a job and more as something that you actually want to do because there's a large element of it that you enjoy. So you sound like you're really busy, but you're also still right. So how do you keep on top of what's going on in the industry? How do you keep on top of industry news and make sure you don't miss anything? Because obviously, as a leading magazine, you want to make sure that you're on top of anything significant that's happening. How do you do that?
We've got a great pool of C-level contacts in the IT industry. So that's always been computing's USP. We have literally hundreds of CIOs and CTOs, etc., that we can sort of call on to give us comment on news or who will point out a bit of news to us that we should be investigating or following or writing about. So that's one area. The other is that we have a great pool of freelancers as well, who help us out or work with us. Mostly UK-based, but also other countries as well. A few names. We've got Dev Kundalaya in India, Vicky Carley, Mark Ballard, Muskan, Aurora, all of them who only just started working with us this year. Dev's been with us for a few years. The other three are fairly new, but are already really proving their worth to computing. And so that's kind of how we do it. If you want to succeed in journalism, you have to be horizon scanning. You've got to always be looking at what's coming up, but you can't trip over your own feet. And you can't forget about what's going on in the here and now. And our freelancers help us keep grounded in the here and now.
Yeah, we certainly have a huge bank of amazing freelance writers in the UK. Obviously, we work with many of them, and they're very, very good. And many of them have been doing this for quite a while, so you can really see the experience when they write, the way they approach a story. It's really, really good compared to a lot of countries where they're still relying on in-house teams, and being a freelancer is a bit less common. I think we've got some amazing freelancers.
Yeah, and I mean, just to clarify, we also have an incredible in-house team. As myself, of course, and as Penny Horwood, our associate editor, who does lots of our long-form content, and then John Leonard, our research director, who obviously does a lot of our research. And together, we make a pretty good team.
You certainly do, and it's interesting to hear that from you, to have you explain how it works, because a lot of our listeners are actually startups. And startups based in the US, a few are in Israel, for example, and they don't necessarily understand how a magazine works. They know there's writers, but they don't necessarily understand what they cover, how they cover, how do they decide what to cover and what not to cover. And so it's really good to have you in the chair today and explain that. So, but why tech? What do you find interesting about the technology market? Because as we've heard, you have tried other industries as well, quite varied and quite different from tech. Mm. Well, what's most interesting for you about the tech market?
It's a very simple answer. I say it's the speed of development. Pets, jewelries, and funerals, and some of the other industries that I've freelanced in, just don't move that quickly. There's not that sort of speed of development. Whereas in tech, there's something new. If not every week, then at least there's something new going on every month, even if that's just a cyber attack.
True. Unfortunately, but yeah, that's true. If it's a cyber attack, because there was a story. No, it wasn't a story. I was in a media training session with one of our clients last week, I think it was. And he was showing examples of, these were broadcast interviews to show how to do them well and how few people didn't do them well. And they were interviewing someone who was responsible for the security of a very, very large company. And they got an attack, a cyber attack that took them down for a while. And this person was trying to explain that you can't just look at what's going on and go, there, that's what happened, that's how we fix it. And we've seen how so many people are going, why didn't you see that happening? And they were trying to explain that there's hundreds, thousands of attacks every day need to get stopped. But you don't know which ones you can stop, which ones you cannot stop. And the understanding of a lot of people in the industry of what's going on or the pace at which it happens is quite limited because they're not technical. And so you're right, in technology, things happen so, so quickly.
Yeah, the security industry, especially as a subsector of technology, is one of the fastest moving and most interesting. It's probably one that needs the highest investment as well and struggles to get that investment because it's hard to prove a negative. It's hard to prove that your investment is paying off because you haven't been attacked. So it's certainly one of the hottest areas of technology and one of the ones that we write about the most in the news. I feel for the security professionals who work in it.
Absolutely. And yes, and anyone who needs to try and communicate on behalf of this company. I mean, you know, one thing that came out of the media training that I often say to companies which are not as experienced in dealing with the media is, don't forget that just because you've written something, say a press release, that would be understood perfectly by an end user, it may be wrong because it needs to be understood by the media. And not all the media has, an incredibly detailed understanding of every technology. And if the media doesn't understand it, they get hundreds of press releases a day. They'll just bin yours. They're not going to come to you and go, I'm very sorry. Your press release didn't make sense to me. Do you mind explaining it? They'll just bin it. And the need for clarity in the tech industry is incredible. I like to say to prospects that our job is to help them open doors and close deals because they need to know that to have the brand that will get them to open the doors and then the ability to speak to people so that they get understood, right? Which is also what a journalist does, right?
Yeah, it sounds harsh, but you are absolutely correct. We, if anything, hundreds of press releases a day is underselling it. We're not technical experts. We know tech in most cases, but we may not know the ins and outs of how everything works. And a lot of our job is to be able to translate things and put them into a even more readable format. So we need to understand what you're talking about. I don't want to say make it easy because that undersells my industry. But do your best to make it accessible.
I think that's the key word, accessible. I think it's really, really important. And because you've been doing this for 15 years, right? And 15 years is a long time in tech. How has the technology market changed since you started writing about it?
Well, as I mentioned, I started off in the display market, so electronic displays. And you certainly don't see many plasma TVs around anymore. So that's one way.
No, you're right. You absolutely won't.
Yeah, but in terms of IT, I think there's a much better understanding of data these days. It used to be big data. No one ever really knew how to use it. But programs have come along. There's huge amounts of analytics and AI going to work on data now and pulling that all together. So that's a big part of it. And away from the tech side, I think lockdowns and the pandemic in 2020 showcased the importance of the IT department. It helped IT leaders to really take a seat at the board table and showed that your next CEO could be your current CIO. You know, technology is just becoming so much more important across every industry. And frankly, I would go so far as to say you shouldn't have a seat on the board if you don't understand technology these days.
That's a good point because, you know, as trite as it could be, but data is a current currency, you know. It's all about data. Without it, you don't have a business, really. Well, most companies don't have a business. And in order to get value, in order to turn data into information, you need the right technology. And we've known that for a long time. So are there any type of... So when you get news, so we said technology moves fast, there's news out all the time. What makes, say, a press release worthy of writing up for you, a technology one? Why would we pick one press release over another?
It's slightly difficult in terms of computing because we don't tend to cover vendor news and research. So huge amount of the press releases we get are, we've, you know, promoted a new chief marketing officer, we don't care. Or our research shows, you know, 85% of CIOs think X. Again, really not the kind of thing that we're interested in. What we do love and would always pay attention to are customer case studies and interviews. So if you have a bit of news that says we've got this new product and this customer is already using it, especially if that's like a big recognizable UK customer, like, I don't know, Williams F1, the Met Office, Kew Gardens, the BBC, whoever. And you're offering an interview with that, with like an IT leader at that place, then we are full steam ahead and we're right there with you.
And that's interesting because after having bigged you up, I'm sure a lot of our listeners will go, oh, I better get this guy's email address and drop him a line. So it's good that you've actually qualified what you're interested in, because otherwise you would get even more press releases and they're useless. The people would wonder why you're not looking at them. So it's not vendor news, it's more like case studies. But are there any topics related to technology that to date you haven't really had a chance to look at or to look at in depth, but that you find interesting and you would like to write about, to cover? Or have you already had the opportunity to pretty much take a stab at reporting about any technology that's on the market?
You know what? I honestly can't think of anything that we haven't covered at all. We write about everything IT and tech related on computing, from storage to security. I would say perhaps one that we don't cover a huge amount is storage, so data storage. But you know, that certainly doesn't mean that we won't ever do it or that we haven't done it in the past. A couple of years ago, I did a really great interview with the CIO of the Imperial War Museum about their data storage. And it was fascinating to hear about. I mean, as you can imagine, Imperial War Museum has archives going back decades. It was just fascinating to hear about the state of IT when this person joined them and to what it is now. So Yeah, I wouldn't say there's anything that we don't ever look at, but I would say there's a few things that we cover a bit less, but, you know, are totally open to hearing about.
Fair enough. So if you were to give advice to a technology startup who would like to get a relationship going with you, what would you say? Because obviously you do talk to, you write about technology. So, and you do mention vendors, even in case studies or anything else. So if there's a tech startup that would like to get on your radar screen, what would you say to them?
I would say we would love to hear from you. If it's, sorry, Fred, if it's directly from you, we get a lot of stuff from PRs, but we actually rarely get vendors reaching out directly to us. So that's one way of doing it. And also, it's, as I mentioned earlier, customer case studies. If you have like a recognizable or impressive UK customer who could talk to us about your product, then we would love to hear from you.
So does it have to be a UK customer and a big name? Can it be a UK customer you haven't come across before, but they have a really cool story?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be a UK customer. I've interviewed people from Air Malta and from just recently, Portland City Police. So doesn't have to be UK based, and doesn't have to be a massive customer either. Just as long as they are recognizable in the UK. Everyone in the UK knows where Portland is. Everyone in the UK knows where Malta is. So yeah, as long as they're recognizable in the UK, then we're very interested to hear about it.
Well, that's great to hear, because case studies is something that we are always telling our clients about. They are so much more interesting than just a product press release, which have their place, absolutely. But case study is certainly one of our preferred activities to work on.
They absolutely have their place in certain publications. Computing, we don't cover product announcements and product news. I have certainly worked in places where we do, and it was a huge part of our day job, but not on computing. We just don't do product news.
No, fair enough.
We do case studies.
Yeah, but that's also one of the reasons why you have a very, very loyal reader base, because they like the content you carry, and it has a lot of credibility. So, you know, it's your model. You know, we are specialists in data storage, PR, anything to do with the, you know, industries related to data storage. It's a niche, but that's why we are very strong. You guys, you focus on, you know, real world implementations, production type environments. And I think that's why your readers come to you, because
and we talk about this stuff a lot at our events as well. We were saying just before we began recording that October and November are our busiest time of the year. We have an event every single week up until December, from sort of early October, and they can be in-person conferences or award shows, or what we call festivals. They can be hosted events at a hotel overnight. And we bring CIOs and other IT leaders together to sort of network and learn from the industry, learn from each other. And also we have spaces there for sponsors. You know, we can't put these events on without
sponsorship.
So that's another way that we can sort of work with vendors, introducing them to C-level contacts from across the UK as well.
Okay. Tom, tell me a little bit about your awards that technology vendors may be interested in. Are there, because, you know, the computing awards used to be massive. You were able as a tech vendor to enter a project. Tell me a little bit about your awards.
Yeah, sure. We actually have, we still do the computing awards. They're now called the UK IT Industry Awards, and that we run them in partnership with BCS, the British Computer Society, or BCS, the Chartered Institute for IT, I should use its official title. So the UK IT Awards, the UK IT Industry Awards, are our biggest one by far of the year. They happened early November, so they were a couple of weeks ago. We have probably just over 1,000 people who come to those. They're in London every year. And we have categories for technology excellence, for people and project excellence, organizational excellence. And so we have vendors entering, we have end users entering. They are gigantic, and there really is a category for everybody. We also have 5 other award shows through the year, starting in, I want to say, May. I may be wrong, but starting fairly early in the year with the Security Excellence Awards.
Sorry, Tom, let's clarify this. When you say starting, do you mean though May would be the submission deadline for...
No, that's when the awards actually are held.
Right.
But the submission, actually, the submission deadline for the security, or the submission, the opening sort of period has just started for the Security Awards. So we're looking for entries now. So that's the Security Awards. We have the DevOps Awards. We have the Digital Technology Leaders Awards, which is for people.
End users or anyone?
Sorry?
When you say these are for people, those awards, are they for people working in end user organizations, or can you be vendors?
Both vendors and end users, yeah.
Okay.
In fact, all of our awards are both vendors and end users. We have different categories that would suit, you know, pretty much everybody. We want to make them about celebrating the industry, and the industry is both vendors and users. So yeah, Security Awards, DevOps Awards, Digital Technology Leaders Awards, the Cloud Awards. And the other one, apart from UKIT, is the Women in Technology Excellence Awards. That's a fairly new one. I think we've only been running it since 2019, but it's practically doubled in size every year. And it's now only, in fact, in its second year, it became our second biggest awards, just after UKIT. So it's absolutely massive. The industry really wants to celebrate the amazing women who work there. And it's going to be held next week. So the 23rd of November. So can't wait to sort of go there and celebrate the amazing women who make up the technology industry.
It sounds like you've got an amazing lineup of awards. Is there like a single URL that our listeners can go to find out more about this award?
Yep, you can head over to computing.co.uk and / events, and everything will be there.
Oh, fantastic. So computing.co.uk / event. Brilliant. Thank you. One final question I have for you, especially because you have such a broad range of responsibility when it comes to the editorial direction of the magazine, what you cover. In your opinion, what do you think would be the most interesting development in the IT, in the technology industry in 2024?
It's a difficult one, because if you'd asked me this in October 2022, I'd probably have held my nose and said the metaverse. And then a month later, ChatGPT came along and upended all of that. So AI became like the big news of 2023. And that would probably be the easy answer for 2024 as well. Artificial intelligence, AI, it's everywhere. It's upsetting and disrupting everything. But if I wanted to avoid the easy answer, I would say, it sounds like a weird one, but I would say the most interesting development is going to be in regulation. So I'm really interested, and I'm waiting to see how this eventual clash between regulators like the Competition and Markets Authority, the SEC in the USA, and the European Commission, how the eventual clash between all of them and big tech shakes out. So we've seen lots of moves by lots of lobbying by big tech like Meta and Amazon and Microsoft and Google so to sort of derail the laws that are coming in, things like the Digital Markets Act, Digital Services Act in the EU, the Digital Markets Competition and Consumers Bill, and the Online Safety Act in the UK. So I'm actually really looking forward to seeing these new laws get tested in court. We might even see more calls for the breakup of big tech, but honestly, who can tell how that's going to play out? Oh, and I'm also waiting to see how Elon Musk continues to poke Twitter's twitching corpse.
It's a bit like a car crash, isn't it? Everyone's paying attention because they want to see quite how far he takes it.
Pretty much.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. That's it for this episode of A3 Communications. Who do you think you are? Thank you for joining us today, Tom.
Thank you very much for having me.
A reminder for our listeners that you can find the list of podcasts in this series at a3communicationspr.com. I'm Fred Monson. Thank you for listening and see you in our next episode of A3 Communications. Who do you think you are?